another episode of Radio Yesterday, brought to you by ChuckChat.com.
Information, please. Wake up, Mr. and Mrs. America. Time to stump the experts. Here's some information about information, please. Send us questions and the correct answers. If acceptable to our editors, they will be presented to a board of experts for the first time during each broadcast. Any question accepted will win $2 for the person who submits it. Any question the experts cannot answer, and we don't claim they can answer them all, will win an extra $5. The contest will be refereed by our regular master of ceremonies, Mr. Clifton Fadiman, literary critic of the New Yorker magazine. Clifton Fadiman.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody. I went to the doctor this afternoon, and he told me I had laryngitis, I think it was. But I'm on the air tonight, I said to him. And he said somewhat absentmindedly, well, that's all right, just don't do any talking. So I'm going to do as little talking as possible this evening and let the experts do it for me. And if you hear an occasional atomizer interrupting the experts, that's me. Now, as for these experts, they're a very right, smart, dandy-looking collection this evening, representing the following fields: music, science, current affairs, sports, entomology, botany, poetry, the classics, history, art, nature study, literature, and taxidermy. The last 10 fields are represented by Mr. John Kieran, who in his spare time runs a sports column in the New York Times. Mr. Bernard Jaffe, who teaches science and writes books about it, is here to answer any and all questions in his domain. Now, if you've been faithfully listening in to these half hours, which mingle entertainment, erudition, and bonehead plays, you may remember the brilliant record made in the first two a couple of weeks ago by Mr. Oscar Levant, pianist and composer of both popular and serious music. Mr. Levant is with us again tonight. He's sitting on a chair. There's no piano in front of it and makes him nervous. Just take it easy, Mr. Levant. Take it easy. Now, as our special guest of honor, I'm proud to introduce to you the world-renowned foreign correspondent, John Gunther, author of Inside Europe, a bestseller on two continents. Mr. Gunther has just returned from a year's trip to the Orient, the result of which, he tells me, will be a book called Inside Asia, which will tell us at last how to tell one Chang from another. Now, believe it or not, the fact is these questions are being sprung tonight on our experts for the first, last, and only time. The only thing that may equal their astonishment at what I'm going to ask them will be my astonishment at what they may reply. I will address questions to the entire board. Any member who wishes to may raise his hand and do his worst. The question must be answered by one member, except where it's composed of more than two parts, in which case the board may cooperate. But if any part is answered incorrectly, $5 is forfeited. And when you hear that cash register sound, that means $5 is actually being paid out to the lucky questioner. And now, gentlemen, if you'll kindly come out of your four comas, we'll get going. The first is really a tough one. I hate to begin with a tough one. I'll ask you to complete two of the following three limericks. This comes from Miss Jean Atwater, 16 Dunellen Road, Scarsdale, New York. Now, any reasonably good ending for any two of the following three limericks will be accepted by me in a very generous mood this evening. One, there was an old man of the Nor, the same shape behind as before. They didn't know where to offer a chair.
So the old man sat down on the floor.
So the old man sat down on the floor is perfectly all right. Credit to Mr. Kieran for that one. Two, there was an old farmer of Brewster who owned a remarkable rooster. The rooster, it died, and the old farmer cried,
around here it ain't like it used to.
All right. I'll let that one go. That was for Mr. Kieran, too. Doing better and better. The classic response is, because he don't get the eggs that he used to, Mr. Kieran. Third, there was a young fellow of Tyre who constantly sat on the fire. When asked, is it hot? He replied, no, it's not.
And wasn't he the awful liar?
The rhythm is terrible,
yeah,
but I'll let
terrible.
The rhyme go. Yes? I'm James Winterbottom, Esquire, is the classic response, Mr. Kieran. But two out of three is correct, and we'll let that one go. Very good. The second question involves four stars. May Robeson, Shirley Temple, Neptune, and Mercury. And it comes from Mr. Joe Kerr of Chicago. It consists of two parts. Now, one man has to answer both parts. Here's the first part. May Robeson is now past her 70th birthday. About how old would she be if she had been born at the same time but spent her life on the planet Neptune? Now, the second question, you begin thinking about that first one. The second question is, if Shirley Temple, now past nine, were a native of Mercury, I suppose that would make her the Temple of Mercury, wouldn't it, Mr. Kern? About how old would she be today? Let's have the first one. May Robeson is now past her 70th birthday. How old would she be if she'd been born at the same time but lived on the planet Neptune? Mr. Jaffe.
I can't give you any exact figures, but she would probably be several thousand years old.
Why would that be so?
Because a year on Neptune runs into the...
Runs into money, I suppose.
Runs into several hundred years. Yes.
Well, it's exactly the opposite. Your idea is correct, but your facts are wrong. May Robeson would be a bouncing baby, if they bounce on Neptune, I don't know whether they do, of about a half year old. Not thousands of years old. Because a year on Neptune is equal to about 165 years on Earth. Is that clear? She's now 70. What is a year, Mr. Jaffe?
Well, a year is a period of time of one revolution of the Earth around the Sun.
Yes, or any planet.
All right.
Isn't that so?
A good year or a bad year?
Well, we make May Robeson, then, on Neptune to be about a half year old. Let's see if we can do better on Shirley Temple. She's now about nine. If she were a native of Mercury, about how old would she be today? Want to take that one, Mr. Jaffe?
Well, reversing the other answer, I suppose she would be about 60 or 70 years old.
Not quite. She'd be 36 years old, which is bad enough for poor Shirley Temple. Because a year on Mercury is about 88 Earth days long. It's a very tough planet for actresses, I should say. Well, that's going to cost us $5. Thank you very much. The third question from Mr. Doyle W. Hunsicker, 3836 Haverhill Drive, Toledo, Ohio. Name five song titles containing the name of some musical instrument. Five song titles containing the name of some musical instrument. Now, you can all get together on this.
Piccolo Pete.
Piccolo Pete is correct. That's Mr. Levant speaking. That's one. Any musical instrument will do.
I'm fascinated by Piccolo Pete.
You want to count that twice, do you, Mr. Levant?
We can change Pete.
Change Pete to Piccolo Joe. Oh, I'll only count that for one so far. Unless you smile at me that way again, Mr. Levant.
I'm frowning.
You can't think of another, Mr. Levant?
Gabriel, blow your horn.
That's two. Now, Mr. Levant, don't be modest. You know there's one in your mind that you're refraining to name.
Lady, play your mandolin.
Yes. He wrote that himself, gentlemen and ladies. That's three.
How about using that twice?
Now we'll have to have two more legitimate ones.
No advertising on this program.
No advertising on this program. No, Mr. Kerr. How about five little fingers and five little toes? Oh, I'll let that one by. Mr. Gunther.
Bluebells of Scotland.
Bluebells of Scotland is perfectly all right. Bells are a musical instrument.
Chimes of Normandy. It's not a song, though.
That makes four and a quarter.
Opera.
Let's see if we can't get one more legitimate one.
Music goes round and round.
Yes, but it's not a musical instrument, would you say?
It comes out somewhere.
Yes, I know. What did I hear you say, Mr. Levant? Oh, Bo, oh, joy, where do we go from here? No, we can't allow that one. One more.
Piccolo Pete.
Piccolo Pete, Piccolo Pete. You know, somehow that's beginning to sound familiar, ladies and gentlemen, Piccolo Pete.
Well, it's a banjo song, and banjo so-and-so
banjo played. On your knee.
All right, banjo on your knee. I just slid them by on that one. The next comes from Miss Mary Johnson of Cleveland. What events of international interest originated or occurred in the following cities last week? I'm going to name four cities, and you have to answer three out of four. One, Buenos Aires. Volunteers on that. Buenos Aires. I'm doing so well on Buenos Aires.
It was a big bullfight.
I beg your pardon?
It was a big bullfight.
Mr. Kieran, you're guessing. And you never do that, Mr. Kieran. Now, if you take Mr. Kieran off birds and put him down in Buenos Aires, he's lost. There was a treaty of peace and friendship and so forth, which ended the war between Bolivia and Paraguay about the Chaco. It was signed there. Do you remember that, Mr. Gunther, or have you just come back from China?
I've been in Westport, Connecticut, which is a long ways from Buenos Aires.
Yes, long way. I haven't got Westport down here. We'll see if we can fix that up for you in a couple of weeks from now. Second, Paris. Well, that's one you can get. Paris. That's in France. Paris.
Well, there's been a very serious international crisis in regard to the Czechoslovak problem and the visit, of course, of the King and Queen of England there, which played into that problem.
That's quite right. Third, Cork. Cork Island.
That's where Mr. Corrigan landed, I believe.
No, I don't think that's quite true.
No, he landed in Cardonnell Airdrome outside of Dublin.
Yes, he landed outside of Dublin, it was. Now, how about Cork? Maybe we can pick up Cork from somebody else here. Well, the port of Cork last week was turned over to Ireland by England. Mr. Gunther, wouldn't you admit that any time England turns over something to another nation, that's news and you ought to know it?
It certainly is.
Yes. Well, that's two. Two wrong. How about Foynes? F-O-Y-N-E-S. That really is a tough one. I'll give you a hint. Foynes.
Did one of the planes, the piggyback planes, come through Foynes or from Foynes?
That's correct. It took off from Foynes. However, we had only two out of four, and that's going to cost us $5. Did pretty well. I think those are rather tough cities. Next, from Mr. John L. Fuller, 408 Ashby Street, Atlanta, Georgia. Identify five of the following. I have seven words here. I'll read them rapidly, and then I'll read them slowly. Dodo, Zobo, Koto, Yo-Yo, Popo, Bolo, and Loco-Foco. Perfectly simple. Dodo. Volunteers on Dodo. Mr. Jaffe.
That's an extinct bird.
Good. Zobo, Z-O-B-O. Now, the only one who ought to get that is Mr. Gunther, and I don't think he ought to get it either, for that matter.
Zobo doesn't sound very political to me.
No, it isn't political.
Is that a hair remover?
No, Mr. LeBan, it's not a hair remover. Zobo is an Asiatic milk-giving cow or some kind of cattle. Mr. Gunther, and your
travels, never met it
in
my
travels. Meet the Zobo?
No, I met other animals of various kinds, but not the Zobo.
Not the Zobo. That's one wrong. Koto, K-O-T-O. Koto. K-O-T-O. Well, Mr. Gunther, you might possibly know that from your Oriental experience, too.
Well, if you put a Y in it, it would be a very important city in Japan.
You want me to put a Y in it for you?
I'd like you very much to put a
That'll
Y in it,
That'll cost you $5 for me to put a Y in it for you. No, Koto is a Japanese musical instrument. And, of course, if you didn't make...
The only Japanese musical instruments I heard made a different kind of noise.
Well, that's too wrong. Both on the Orient. How about yo-yo? Y-O, space? Y-O. Mr. Gunther.
That's a game.
Good. It's a novelty toy top. Popo. P-O-P-O, Mr. Jaffe.
Isn't that the abbreviation for the mountain in Mexico?
Yes, but you'll have to pronounce it.
Popo Catapetl.
Nice work. That's correct. Six, Bolo, B-O-L-O. There are two possible answers for that. Mr. Gunther?
Well, one is a nickname for Bolsheviks.
Yes, that's right. There are three, then.
Oh, it's a kind of sword that was used in the Philippine Islands,
that's
I believe.
Right. And there's, I can think of one other meaning for Bolo.
Is it important. Perhaps a kind of card game?
It may be. Wasn't there a man named Bolo Pasha?
Oh, yes.
A spy in France or something before around the time of the opening of the war?
Yes.
All right, okay on Bolo. And last, Loco Foco. L-O-C-O dash F-O-C-O. Loco Foco.
The swing dance.
You made, Mr. LeBan, you made that up, too. Loco Foco. Mr. Kieran, you look very intelligent.
No, it's a mistake. It's a fake. I think it's a Spanish term. I don't know whether it refers to a fuel or a crazy fire or something of that kind.
Fuel, did you say?
Yes.
You mean F-U-E-L?
Yes.
I wonder whether I ought to allow that. Loco Foco is a friction match. Did you know that, Mr. Kieran?
No, I didn't know.
Didn't know that. Well, I'm afraid that's going to cost us $5. And it's also applied to a group of Democrats who were active around 1835.
No politics, you said.
Oh, yes, I remember, Mr. Kieran. I beg your pardon. The next one, from Mrs. H.E. Davis, 239 Gibson Street, Lowell, Massachusetts. Identify five of the following animals in literature. I'll name seven. The first is easy. Rosinante. Volunteers. Mr. Gunther.
It's in Don Quixote.
Yes. What is it?
A donkey.
No, that's not quite right, Mr. Kieran.
That's the horse. He's thinking of Sancho Panza's donkey.
Yes, he was. I think I'll let that go, though.
I
between
them,
they
pardon,
got
Mr.
it.
Mr. Kieran.
Buck. B-U-C-K. Volunteers on Buck. Not Frank Buck, just Buck.
You mean used in literature?
Yes. Following an animal used in literature.
Well,
I don't know how many times he was used.
In The Merry Wives of Windsor by Shakespeare.
An animal?
Well, certainly it's mentioned.
What animal is it in The Merry Wives of Windsor?
The buck. The male deer.
Really?
Well, certainly.
Well, is that his name? Oh, it's his name. I don't mean buck used generically.
Oh.
That's a good word, generically.
That's different.
Is it Jack London?
Yes, Jack London.
Yeah.
In what book, remember?
Call of the Wild.
Call of the Wild, yes. It was a dog. Thank you, Mr. Levant and Mr. Kieran. Between them, they got it. That's two. The third, Donder and Blitzen. That's really one. Donder and Blitzen. Mr. Kieran.
Well, that's in that poem. It was the night before Christmas.
Yes, what animal?
The reindeer.
Yes, two of the reindeer. All right. Don't be indignant, Mr. Kieran. Four. Nana. N-A-N-A. Nana. N-A-N-A. Nana. I can't keep on saying Nana, N-A-N-A all evening. Nana. N-A-N-A.
Nanny goat.
It's a North American
Nana
newspaper
line. Nanny goat, but that's not what I'm thinking of. Any of you remember Nana?
It's the name of a French novel.
Yes, but that's not an animal, exactly. Well, Nana is the dog in Peter Pan. Remember the dog in Peter Pan? That's only one wrong. Now, the fifth is a tough one. Hamilcar. H-A-M-I-L-C-A-R.
Last name, Barker.
Last name, Barker?
B-A-R-C-A.
Hamilcar Barker, well, that's a historical character.
Well.
Yes, but not an animal. Stick to animals. Mr. Gunther.
I think, but I'm not sure, that it's in one of the Tarkington stories.
No, it is not. It is in The Crime of Sylvester Bonnard. It's the cat in The Crime of Sylvester Bonnard by Anatole France. That's two wrong. Captain Flint. Captain Flint. Oh, that's too bad. That's too bad. It's the parrot in Treasure Island. Long John Silver's parrot, I believe it was. And finally, Archie. Archie? Mr. Kieran.
That's a friend of my hit a bowl of cat.
Yes, and will you identify it further?
John Marquis's cockroach.
John Marquis's cockroach. Well, we got three wrong out of that, and that's going to cost us $5. The next one, from Albert E. Leeds, 6241 Addison Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Now listen to this one. If the sun stopped shining on the other side of the earth, could a girl be kissed in the moonlight on this side? If the sun stopped shining, I rather like that one. If the sun stopped shining on the other side of the earth, could a girl be kissed in the moonlight on this side? That's not a bad popular song, Mr. Levant. Mr. Jaffe.
I don't believe she could.
Why? That's the correct answer, so we're all right. Why couldn't
Because the moon's light comes from the sun.
Yes, it's
and
reflected.
The earth would hide the sun's light, and therefore the moon would not be visible.
Yes, the moonlight is only reflected sunlight. And if the girl wasn't kissed... If the girl wasn't kissed, Mr. Jaffe, that means there'd be no reflection on the moon.
No reflection on the girl.
No reflection on her son.
I beg your pardon?
There'd be no reflection on her son.
There'd be a mighty poor reflection on the man. Well, we're $20 down. Now, boys, perk up, buck up, and perk up again. And let's see if we can do better for the rest of the evening. The next question comes from Miss Virginia Bourne Mueller, 337 28th Avenue, San Francisco, California. What movie stars introduced or are identified with six out of these seven favorite songs of the screen? I'll read the name of the song. and then a few bars will be played by the pianist. One Night of Love.
Grace Moore.
Mr. Levan?
Grace Moore.
Yes. What was the name of the motion picture?
As far as I'm concerned, One Night of Love.
One Night of Love, right. Night and Day.
The Gay Divorcee.
Mr. Levan?
The Gay Divorcee.
Yes. Who is responsible for introducing it? What movie star?
Fred Astaire. It was in a play originally, a musical show.
Yes, that's right. Three Dark Eyes. Mr. Levan?
Well, is that in a picture? It's in every Russian restaurant.
It's in every Russian restaurant. That's true about the Russian restaurants, but I'll have to ask you to give me a picture in addition for the same money, Mr. Levan. Dark Eyes.
Oh, that was a French picture called Dark Eyes with Simon, and Harry Bauer.
Yes. How many times did you say that? Simon. Oh, yeah. Yes, that's right.
I never saw the picture.
We let you in anyway. Yes, it was also used by the Ritz Brothers in a picture called On the Avenue.
That's right.
Okay, on that. Donkey Serenade.
Firefly.
Firefly. And what star would you associate it with?
Jeanette MacDonald or Nelson Eddy. I didn't see that.
Jeanette MacDonald. You'd be right. Alan Jones is the one you're thinking of. Jeanette MacDonald will do. Five, I'm Falling in Love with Someone. Pardon me?
Naughty Marietta.
I'm falling in love with someone. You're Naughty Marietta. What star?
Jeanette MacDonald and Nelson Eddy.
That's right. You stick to them and you're okay.
I didn't see that one either.
Didn't see that one? Don't you go to the movies at all?
I don't like that kind of a picture.
Don't like that kind of picture?
No.
Advertisement. Six. I Love to Whistle. All right.
Deanna Durbin. I don't remember the name of the picture.
We'll let you go on Deanna Durbin. Don't you remember the name of the picture?
It was the last picture she did with Herbert Marshall, a composer.
Yes, what was the name of the picture? Mr. Karen, do you remember it?
No.
Wait a minute. School. Wait a minute. Hint with your lips, and I'll get it.
Yes, here's a hint. Mad About Music.
That's right.
Get it? Okay. And finally, Someday My Prince Will Come Along.
Snow White.
Pardon?
Snow White.
Snow White and the Seventh Dwarf. 7 out of 7. Very good. Now, before I read the next one, I'm going to ask which of you gentlemen are married. Will you raise your hands if you are not married? All married?
No, I'm not married.
Not married. A scared look on your face then, Mr. Levant. All right. I want to know who's married and who's not before I go into this question. From Mr. George S. Hulse, 56 West Alvord Street, Springfield, Massachusetts. According to Samuel Hoppenstein, men in single state should tarry, while women, I suggest, should marry. That's a quotation from Samuel Hoppenstein. Quote two other well-known, uncomplimentary comments on marriage. Now, if you want Mr. Levant to be the only one to answer these, the rest of you, all right. Mr. Kieran, do you want to leap into this breach? Mr. Kieran.
Well, I don't remember the whole of the Kipling thing, but of course you may write it on his slate or cut it on his card that a young man married is a young man marred.
That's correct. That's one. We have to get one more uncomplimentary reference from any of you gentlemen, whether married, unmarried, or in between.
You don't want to expose any private lives, do you?
Oh, yeah, sure. We'll expose any given private life, yeah? Perhaps some of you can think of St. Paul's famous remark about marriage.
To the Corinthians?
Yeah. Picked right up, Mr. Kieran did on that one. How about it, Mr. Kieran? Did you let us have that one? One of the gloomiest remarks ever made about marriage. St. Paul's...
Marry in haste, repeated leisure.
I beg pardon?
Marry in haste, repeated leisure.
I'll let that one go, as a matter of fact. That's all right. Mr. Kieran.
Swinburne has a couplet. Marriage and death and division make barren our lives.
That'll do. Can any of you remember the famous epigram about second marriage?
Yes.
What does it represent?
Triumph of hope over experience.
Very good, Mr. Kieran. Mr. Mr. Walter Ahrens of Denver, Colorado, wants you to identify five of these people. There are seven altogether. Now, I'm going to have enough trouble pronouncing them, much less identifying them. The first is Miaha. Now, I'm not laughing at anybody here. Miaha.
How do you spell it?
Oh, you want me to spell it too, Mr. Gunther? M-I-A-J-A.
Oh, he's the loyalist general, first in command of the defense of Madrid, and then, I believe, on the Valencia sector.
That's correct. Thank you very much, Mr. Gunther. To Itagaki. Itagaki. Mr. Gunther?
He's the new Japanese minister of war. Before that, he was vice chief of staff of the Kwantung Army and was the author of the Manchurian Incident in 1931.
Goodness gracious, Mr. Gunther, you're as good on Japanese as Mr. Kieran is on birds.
Oh, no.
Three, Reza Shah Pahlavi.
Shah of Persia.
Are you Shah of that?
Why, sultanly, sir.
Oh, you're probably... Mr. Gunther, you can only get away with that sort of thing once on this program. Four, Béla Kun.
Oh, he was the communist dictator of Hungary in 1921 or 22.
That's
has since gone back to Russia, and I believe is still living there.
That's remarkable. The latter part. Five, that's correct. Primo de Rivera.
He was the Spanish general and politician who was dictator in the last years of King Alfonso's reign.
That's correct. Six. Now, the next one, I'm going to do my best to pronounce. I'm sure I get it wrong. Tufik Rashdu Aras.
Mr. Gunther? Yes, he's the Turkish foreign minister, but the reason the name is difficult is he changed it recently from Tufik Rushdi Bey.
Well, do you think that was easier before?
He was a doctor of medicine in Salonika before he became a politician and then a young Turk and then the Turkish foreign minister.
Thanks very much. And seven, V.J. Patel. That's P-A-T-E-L.
Oh, he's one of the three or four leading members of the Indian National Congress under Mr. Gandhi. He's the boss of Bombay.
Mr. Gunther got 7 out of 7. I think that's a pretty darn good rate. Now, the next one is not in anybody's field, really, because it has to do with money. The next one is from Mrs. Yvonne Jelliff, 77 Brookside Avenue. In what often quoted connection is each of five of the following sums of money familiar? Now, there are 7 altogether. Not 1 cent.
For tribute.
That's correct. Millions for defense, but not 1 cent for tribute. Second is 5 cents, or 5 cent. That was Mr. Gunther answering.
Oh, not 5 cents for pericardi dead? Wasn't that the remark?
No, you've got your sum wrong. Got your sum wrong, Mr.
Kieran. What this country needs is a good 5 cents.
That's correct, Mr. Kieran. Three, a guinea. How about...
The ranking, but the guinea stamp.
Yes, yes, correct.
And the man for all that.
Guinea the moonlight, guinea the gal, and leave the rest to me. Either one. Four, dime. Dime.
10 cents a day.
All right, I let that one go. How about, brother, can you spare a dime, Mr. Levant?
I like 10 cents a day.
All right, we'll let that 10 cents a day go. How about pieces of eight? Pieces of eight.
Pieces of eight as in Stevenson's Treasure Island.
Yes, we got it this time. That's the same old parrot that we met before but didn't recognize. 20 pieces of silver.
20 pieces of silver. 30? Could you make it?
Don't bargain with me. No, I'll make it 20. 20 pieces of silver. They've got all the others so far. It's the amount for which Joseph was sold by his brothers to the Ishmaelites. It's in the Old Testament, of course. And finally, 6,000 ducats. 6,000 ducats.
Merchant of Venice.
That's correct. Do you happen to remember the quotation? I'll let that one go. Merchant of Venice is correct.
No, I'm afraid not.
If every ducat in 6,000 ducats were in 6 parts and every part a ducat, I would not draw them. I would have my bond. Well, that's... in fact, we've got every one of those except one, I believe. So far, we're down $20. We've paid out exactly $20, and I'm afraid that'll be the last one for tonight. Thank you all members of the board and all the folks that have submitted questions. One more thing. Your master of ceremonies is forced to make a hurried trip to New Mexico next week, and he won't be with you next Tuesday. For George S. Kaufman, one of America's most brilliant wits and dramatists, Pulitzer Prize winner, Broadway genius, will take my chair, and good luck to him. And here's something to watch for. His guest of honor will be Morse Hart, who's collaborated with him on many successful plays, and who now, for one half hour, will be on the other side of the fence. And now Mr. Cross has a word for you about next week's contest. Good night, all, and I'll be with you again on Tuesday, August 8th.
Thank you.